Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
Now, of course, the one thing, by the way, that I will say is, and the one negative thing that has come out of the coronavirus is there are many, many stories that are happening around the world. There's still wars going on. There's still people being murdered. There's still people dying. There's still domestic violence. There's still rape. There's still people being abused. And none more so, of course, than the report that's come out in the last few days. And child sexual abuse was tolerated at the highest levels of former scouting organisations, with the crimes of those who preyed on children covered up to protect the reputation of the movement. A damning report has just concluded this, and there is evidence that groups of six offenders operated at the top of Scouting Ireland's legacy organisations to protect each other and facilitate child abuse. And this is according to a report by a child protection expert, Ian Elliott. The government is to consider the findings of the report and decide whether a statutory inquiry into historic abuse may be required. However, there are concerns over whether such an inquiry would be able to uncover substantially more information, according to sources. Now, just to be clear, by the way, this report doesn't mean that anybody should be held culpable criminally, because it's only a report. For that, you would have to have a criminal trial, I suppose. There has been many criminal trials, by the way, in relation to different people who have been sexually abused. We will talk to one of those victims a little bit later on. But Scouting Ireland made a full organisational apology on foot of the report's publication on Thursday. And the historic abuse relates to the Catholic Boy Scouts of Ireland and the Scout Association of Ireland, which merged to form Scouting Ireland back in 2004. The report said that one of the legacy bodies was a seriously dysfunctional organisation, with sex offenders dominating the leadership for decades. This is almost like when I went back to when I was working on radio back in 2001 on another radio station, and the reports were coming out, the Ryan report, the Murphy report, the Cloyne report, all in relation to the Catholic Church. And this is more or less a similar situation we have now in relation to Scouting Ireland, and I suppose people who had access to young children. And it's a shocking, shocking, shocking story. If you get a chance, try to read the report. And what seemed to be rampant, now 1 in 4, a charity for survivors of child sexual abuse, said efforts should be made to bring perpetrators of such abuse to justice. And they join me on the line, Deirdre Kenny, who's the Deputy CEO and the Advocacy Director of 1 in 4, the Charity for Child Sexual Abuse, joins me. Good afternoon to you, Deirdre.
Good morning, or good afternoon. How are you doing?
This is reminiscent when I was working on radio back in 2001, and we had the Cloyne and the Murphy and all the different reports, the Ryan report, all the different reports that we had in relation to child sexual abuse within the Catholic Church. And here we are again. You know, we thought that kind of stuff could never happen. Mind you, I know a lot of this is historical, but we didn't think we'd be seeing more of this. I mean, it's a shocking report.
I have to say, I thought the same thing yesterday when I read the report. It's it definitely echoes very similar, I suppose, chapters that we would have read in both the Murphy and Cloyne and Ryan reports. But it's there's something about this that seems quite devastating in terms of the serial offending that went on at the hands of people in power in the organisations that are reviewed in the report.
And see, maybe for younger people today, they won't understand, I suppose, the legacy that went with this. I mean, I was in the Cubs. I'm 56. I was in the Cubs, and I remember I didn't like it, so I never went down to the Scouts. But my mother, I remember all my friends, they were all in the Scouts, and in those days, they went off on retreats, and they went off on weekends, and it just seems that many children were sexually abused. And similar to the Catholic Church, it was a case of if a complaint was made about a scout leader, predominantly male scout leaders, if a complaint was made, he was just moved to another part of the organisation or just moved somewhere else.
That certainly seems to be the case. And the learning review highlights, I suppose, the cronyism, as it calls it, that went on in the higher ranks of the organisation. And it really outlines how children were not put first and how the reputations and the disclosures made were protected by both serial offenders, but also by non-offending people in the organisation. Now, there were good people in the organisations that tried to bring these issues to the fore, but were put under pressure not to do so. It's quite hard to, I suppose, understand now when you look back. But what we have to keep in mind is the hundreds of people who were impacted by this behaviour, and that the report being published yesterday will bring again to the fore their trauma. And I think it's really important that that's recognised, and survivors have come out and called for the statutory inquiry. And I guess that's really, this report, while it details the dysfunction of the organisation, it doesn't detail the incidences of abuse or the harm that was caused in maybe in a way that that other reports have. So I can completely understand their need to have a statutory inquiry.
I mean, when I look back, you know, at 56 years of age, when we talk about the Catholic Church, by the way, and we talk about Scouting Ireland now and these organisations, these legacy organisations that would have been involved in the Cubs and the Scouts and the Girl Guides and everything else and all these other organisations that would have had a lot of access to children. And particularly, I suppose, the Catholic Church, because they had the power as well. I mean, a lot of this is to do with power too, that you would have that authority or figure of authority that we would never in a million years accuse of doing something wrong. But there was always a sense, and I don't know, Zira, I don't want to ask your age, but there was always a sense in those days, back in the 70s, that everybody knew what was going on, but nobody ever said anything. And I find that almost even myself, that, you know, we knew as kids, oh, he's a bit dodgy, you know what I mean? Oh, don't stand too close to him. And all that kind of stuff was said about people, but nobody ever really took it seriously. And I think now in 2020, I don't know why people didn't take that seriously. Now, some people did and made complaints, but as you rightly said, you know, there was cronyism and, you know, sure, people said, ah, sure, he wouldn't do that. Or just stop, for God's sake, don't dare complain about him. He's a pillar of society. And these people were pillars of society.
They were. And what made them pillars of society was the silence that was around them about their behaviour. And I think it's really important to acknowledge, doesn't matter what organisation it is and, or what time frame we're talking about, sexual abuse in society generally, it propels shame and guilt on the part of the victim, which creates a silence. And there establishes that really, really innate power dynamic. And that gets spread throughout communities, throughout families. It's the same dynamic. If we the work we do now is more with families than it's ever been. And it's a very similar dynamic. Where there's secrecy and shame and guilt, there will be silence. And the person who has the power in that dynamic becomes more powerful. And you can imagine how that would happen in an organisation when you're talking about cronyism and decision-making and hiding secrets. It becomes absolutely endemic. And that seems to be what Ian Elliott certainly discovered in this situation.
I mean, when we look at the figures, anywhere. By the way, 356 alleged victims, 275 perpetrators, which suggests some of the perpetrators were serial perpetrators, who primarily operated between the 1960s and 1990s. That's obviously as far as we go back. It probably goes back further than that. And those figures are a conservative guesstimate, I imagine, as well. A lot of those, there's probably a lot more who just haven't come forward.
Exactly. And that's always going to be the case. And that's why I can really, you know, understand why other victims who have come forward would like to see a clearer picture of actually what happened. What I wonder, and Ian speaks about in his review, that a lot of the files were held by individuals, for instance, in their own homes, and he may not have had access to all the information. And I would suggest that all of that information should be handed to the Gardaí to carry out a full investigation, especially if a statutory inquiry is not established, because that is key. And it's key for survivors to know that an independent, I suppose, statutory authority has had sight of this information and could fully explore it. And I would say the Gardaí are probably best placed to do that.
Yeah, well, they're saying that if they did have an inquiry, that they don't know whether they would uncover any more information at all in relation to it. That obviously Ian Elliott has done such a good job in his own report in relation to this.
Yes, excellent.
But of course, the report is just a report. There will be no criminal charges out of this report. It's just a report, unfortunately. And many of those cases, or are you aware, Deirdre, that are still ongoing? Now, we'll be talking to one victim in a few minutes, but many of those cases are you aware of that are still ongoing? Or how many people have actually gone behind bars?
I know there have been some convictions, but I guess it's very difficult to put the pieces together in terms of the stories that Ian is talking about versus individuals who have been impacted by Scout leaders who've come forward and gone to the guards. And that may not be possible to do that unless a statutory inquiry is established. I guess what is really important is that if there are survivors out there that need support, obviously it's important that they get professional, independent support. One of the things that had been established was a helpline by Scouting Ireland, and people have been encouraged to use that, which is fine and good. But I guess some people would see a conflict of interest there, and it would be important that survivors have a choice and know that that they there is other places that they can get that support.
Like yourselves, for example.
Exactly.
Yes. And by the way, if there are people listening, I want to give out that number now. It's 01662 4070. That's 01662 4070 if you want to contact 104. It's a shocking, shocking story, and I'm sure it's not the last we're going to hear of it, Deirdre. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more will come out
next year.
And you know what? It's pretty sad that it's come out at this time, because I'm finding a lot of really, really important news, and this is really, really important news, is not getting the coverage that it should get, unfortunately, because of coronavirus and COVID-19. But it is important, I think, that we really talk about it. And I think when we're past all this, I think it's important we bring it back up again.
Absolutely. It needs to be kept on the agenda for sure. And especially if the next government, I think that's one of the other issues in terms of a statutory inquiry, that they keep this on the agenda.
Listen, thank you very much indeed. And I appreciate you coming on the air, Deirdre Kenny.
Thank you.
Bye. All right. By the way, that number, once again, if you do want to contact 104, you can, or you have been a victim, or you just want somebody to talk to in relations, or you want to get advice, it's 01, it's a double number, 662 4070. Now, in relation to those, and as I mentioned already, the shocking story of 356 alleged victims and 275 perpetrators. One of those victims was a man called Paul O'Toole. And Paul joins me on the line. Paul, good afternoon to you.
Good morning, how's it going?
Good afternoon. Paul, how are you feeling since this report came out? I know it doesn't solve any problems. And in saying that, by the way, you were abused, obviously, and your abuser, David O'Brien, went to jail. He is in jail as we speak. But it doesn't solve the problem for you, because it doesn't make it go away. It's just a report as such. It's just what you knew already, I suppose.
Yeah, I kind of question what was the point of the report, actually, because all it seems to do, and it states in its own writing there, that it's to look for problems that existed and move on from them.
It's to make sure we don't make the same mistakes again, I suppose. That's the main reason for it, isn't it?
So why tell anyone about it? Just go off and fix your stuff and be done with it, you know. Don't bother making a big report. It doesn't make sense to me from my point of view as a victim. There's nothing in it for victims, I don't think, you know. It says the intention is not to allocate blame to specific individuals, but to fully acknowledge mistakes.
Yeah.
Now, here's the word I have a problem with, the calling it a mistake, mistakes that have been previously made. I said yesterday on a radio show that mistake is burning the toast, or taking a wrong turn in Wicklow when you're looking for somewhere, you know.
It's not ignoring an abuser, yeah.
Raping a child is not a mistake. It's a criminal act. You have to put the right words on these things. And this report, there's an awful lot of plumassing and backslapping in this report of how good they are and how the volunteers. You know, if you see a crime happening, just because you're in the scouts doesn't mean you're all of a sudden a hero because you volunteer some information. You know, anyone would do it. It's in anyone's innate ability to have a conscience and do something when they see something being wrong. This whole report is all about backslapping each other. I could read through it, and it's slightly nauseating to me to read line after line of how brilliant they all consider each other.
And I understand, as a victim, Paul, survivor, I don't know what the right word nowadays to use, but I understand how you would feel reading that report, because you knew all this already. And, I mean, what happened to you, you were sexually abused, and you were in the Kilmore troop, and this is where O'Brien was a leader back in the 1970s. And I suppose these people took advantage of the fact that parents trusted them with their children to take them off to kind of remote locations on camp or retreats or whatever it happened to be.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there were complaints made about this guy, and yet he stayed in the organisation. He was only removed officially from the organisation in 2018. At that stage, he was in jail.
Yeah, he was went to jail in 2015. 15th of November 2015, David Bryan did.
And yet he was only removed officially from the organisation in 2018.
That could be someone else you're thinking of there.
Okay.
Brian has been a vagabond and a street urchin for last good few years now. He's living in a wet shelter down on Benbow Street, up to the time he went to prison. But there are people who was in the scouts who were not convicted, but they were reported, and who were in it up to like last year, the year before. RT Investigates done a big team there. Philip Galler and Smith done a great report on it there last year, and they helped push this thing forward as well as other radio shows around the country, you know. So,
and why do you think they got away with it? I mean, what age would you have been when he started behaving the way he did towards you? What age were you at that stage?
Well, I was born in 63 and I joined in
74.
And I was 11. And I was joined the Cubs, but I was on the verge of too old for the Cubs and just right the age to start scouts. So I started scouts as a very young boy. And I was 11 and I was about 12 when the abuse started. And I went on for about 2 years on and off on different camping trips. And
by the way, one of the traits of these types of individuals, I don't know if it happened in your case, was they tended to befriend the parents of the child they were abusing to gain trust. I mean, were these scout leaders, were they friendly with your parents, or did your parents, were they?
Yeah.
Now,
this guy, you know, I tell you, in my police statement, in the victim impact statement in court, I described how he groomed our whole neighbourhood. Like, he was considered, back in the day, people trusted each other back in the 60s. There was a great trust.
Of course there was,
no one
yeah.
locked their hall door. No one locked their car. Bikes were left out in the street.
Yeah, neighbours looked after friends, children, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah.
We borrowed each other's bikes. Neighbours looked after each other's kids. Everybody watched out for each other. And our street was special that way. We lived down, our back street was our lead.
Yeah.
Down in our town there.
Yeah.
And
I know.
And the whole street. Just a sea of kids all summer.
Yeah.
And Dave O'Brien would walk onto that street. And his kids would rally up to him. It was like the Pied Piper. And parents loved him. And we loved him. And he was respected and trusted. And what he was doing was he was grooming his way through the whole neighbourhood. And, you know, the damage he'd done, I look at it like, by the time he went to prison, it took 40 years to get justice for me. And he admitted to molesting and raping 60 kids. And if you multiply 60 kids by 40 years, that's 2,400 years of absolute agony that one man planted in our neighbourhood. That's just a simple mathematical...
Okay, just for people who, if they want information, you know, right, he was convicted of indecent assault and this was in 2015. And he was jailed for 4.5 years. And in 2019, he was convicted of sexual assault of a further 4 people and received a 6.5 year sentence, which I imagine would run concurrently. So so he'll be out in probably 4 years.
Yeah, well, there's more coming down after him as well.
Yeah.
That's the good thing about us going public. I think the reason we've done it, the state's the prosecutor turned around to us, public, what do we call her, VPP.
Yeah.
Turned around to us in the court when that question came up, and the three of us sitting there, and says, "Do you guys want to go public with this, or do you want to remain anonymous?" The three of us nodded our head at the same time.
Yeah.
Hadn't even discussed it with each other. Me, Dave Smith, and Colin Bracken, the three of us decided we're going to go public to bring more cases forward, and we did. And David Bryan has had a lot of cases come after him now, and there's another one that was when we walked out of court that day. It was an elation, but there was something, like something fantastic just happened, and Dave Smith was jumping around, not jumping around, but we were relatively, you know, and I looked at Colin and I said to Colin, "You, what's up with you, man? Something's up with you." I couldn't figure it out. I said to him, "What's wrong, Collie?" And he said, "What?" And there's two men that abused my friend Colin Bracken.
Okay. Okay, we won't talk about those cases today. And
we put him away.
Oh, they were convicted, sorry.
Colin put him away.
Yeah.
And it's not over yet, you know?
It's not over yet. And I know for a lot of victims out there listening today, listen to you, it's just heartbreaking, Paul, to listen to what you went through. And I know putting somebody in jail is not the answer. It doesn't heal it for you. It doesn't make it go away.
Yeah.
But it does finally, I suppose, for everybody, people, when we spoke to Deirdre a few minutes ago from 1 in 4, the biggest fear at the time is that you don't want to tell anybody because you think no one will believe you because this is such a wonderful guy. As you mentioned, he's like the Pied Piper of the area. Every kid loves him. Every parent trusted him. And if you came forward and said, well, he was doing something to me that he shouldn't have been doing, they'd be kind of rubbishing your statements and saying, I'm so silly. He wouldn't do that to you.
Yeah, there's a huge dynamic about grooming and who they groom. It's very, very sinister. You know, there's a lot of psychology written about it. And the level that they can operate at, it's like another radio station that no one else can tune into.
Yeah.
And they tune into you somehow with kids. They just do it. They have a knack of charming beyond anyone's recognition.
And did other kids, like obviously apart from yourself, did other kids, you know, that were in the troupe, did people know that he was a dubious character? Because I remember when I was in school, back in, you know, in secondary school in the De La Salle many, many years ago, there was one particular teacher, a Christian brother, And everyone was always saying, oh, you wouldn't want to go near him, Jay-Z, he's a bit dodgy.
Yeah.
Was that kind of conversation happening? Were people aware that this guy was up to something? Or was everybody thinking Asher's just innocent fun? I mean, what were they thinking or what were they saying?
It was rumour. I heard, the only thing I ever heard was a joke being made about him one time when I look back on all these years. And there was a troop down in Western Row in town, and he was attached to them as well. And they had rabbits. And there was a joke saying that one of the rabbits had rabbits, you know, the way the rabbits And there was a joke saying that Dave O'Brien was the father because he's basically having sex with the rabbits, you know.
Right, okay.
And it was just a joke, fun. And it was just, so you wouldn't know if to take it seriously or not. But I know I did. And another fella who told that joke, and I've never confronted him on it because I wouldn't, you know, you don't want to bring up, you don't know what's there.
And when was the first time that you confronted this and that you went or decided, I need to talk to somebody about this, I need to go to the authorities? When was the first time you did that?
Well, I didn't. But the first time I went to the authorities was 1992. And I got sober by then. I had an awful time with alcohol and drugs.
Yeah.
And what do you call it? I've been off it now like 30 years. But in 1992, I went to the police for the first time. And the first time, my wife, we've known each other since we were kids. The first time she ever heard the whole story was in court. She was in tatters, you know. Don't tell people. I didn't even tell my own wife what was going on.
Because I imagine that abuse changed the direction of your life. Destroyed your life.
There's not two horrible questions. I had a great therapist, Karen Wallace. She asked me a question one time. Says, what would you like have been like if you hadn't met Dave O'Brien? And it took me about 6 weeks to even start putting words around that of intense therapy to come to thing. And then when I finally got through that one, the next big question was, would you change anything? Would you change it? And they're two huge dynamic questions, you know, in my therapy that was those years.
And do you think, I'm sure it would have been, but I don't even think I need to ask you that question, but do you think your life would have been terribly different if this hadn't have happened to you? Your life would have taken a completely different direction. I mean, do you feel like you've had your life robbed, basically?
Well, you do. And do you know what? The funny thing, I'm glad you asked that question again because it brings me back to something I wanted to say you brought up earlier. When we were leaving, we went to RTE to do some news, and myself and Colin were coming back up the north side, and we were driving the road, and we were talking to each other. We're always bouncing off each other, you know, saying, I say, you don't know what, Collie, but you've come a long way in the last year, you know. And he'd say something.
You're supporting each other, yeah.
Yeah, and we'd see it before. He'd see it in me before I'd see it in me, and likewise with him. But I was saying to him last night, I said, do you know what it feels like since we met in that courtroom that day? Because when I went to the court, I didn't know who I was going to meet.
Yeah,
I didn't know if Dave O'Brien had molested any other kids. I was just the one. I was just bringing him on my own. And I meet Collie in there, that's our first. I hadn't seen Collie in probably 35 years. And there you are, sitting in court. Of course, we've become fast friends now, you know. And here we are driving up the road, and I said, you know what it's like? It's like for years you're on ground, and it's nothing but greasy, slippy shit on you, and you just can't get anywhere. Every time you get up off your knees, you fall again. And for 40 years, you're getting and trying to move, and you're like you're walking, but you're getting nowhere. And it's like when a court case comes along and someone throws a bit of sand onto that slippy surface.
Just
that
so you can
on.
Get a grip back on your life you again.
Bit of, and it says, I don't know where I am now, Collie. I don't know where I'm going. But I'm not there. There was a there, and I'm not there anymore. Now I'm here. And now I have some perspective. For the first time in 40 years, I have perspective because I've moved from where I was. Because when you're abused, you're stuck.
What would you like to say to him, by the way? Have you spoken to David O'Brien since the allegations you made against him and the conviction and everything else? Have you spoken to him at all? Apart from the victim impact statement that you would have made?
No. I went in 1992, I came back to Dublin and I went and knocked on his door. And I'd done a few things while I was here on a small trip. And one was to go to meet him. And basically it was just to... I carried so much anger and pain. I just wanted to meet him and dump it on him. So I did. I just said it was... I had nothing to do. The only part I played in that whole thing is that I was there. I had no other part in it.
Because
I blamed myself. Was I just too pretty? Was I too good-looking? Or was I too demure? Or too... Was I sensual? in a way that I shouldn't have been. Like, I was blaming myself.
But you were a child.
I know, but, you know, 12-year-old kid. I knew nothing about sex. Completely innocent. And yet, as an adult, I'd look back on that child and say, was he too provocative to this man? Is that why it happened? It's a self-blame. It's a cycle that has to be broken through therapy and through help, and also broken anyway can break it.
And just finally, Paul, if you could say something to him now, because obviously now he's been through the trial, he's gone to jail, maybe he's reflected a little bit on what he's done. I don't know whether he's remorseful about what, was he asked to make a statement at the end of the case, by the way? Did he seem remorseful at all?
No, I think he's probably drugged out of it. He's on probably all sorts of, sedated drugs.
Sedated.
He looked sedated. Yeah.
Okay. And if you could say something to him now that he's been through all this and maybe has some sort of recognition as to what he's done to yourself and to Colly, as you call him, and Mr. Bracken and many other victims who are probably going to come forward in the future, what would you say to him?
I don't know. I think I'd like to get him in. Half of me wants to kill him. I'd love to be like, just give me a baseball bat in a room in 5 minutes. Or maybe give me
That's an emotional reaction that everybody would have, of course, yeah.
But I wouldn't do that. But if I was going to talk to him, I don't know, maybe I'd want him to speak to me first and see. I'd probably want to know why. Was it worth it? For the moments, which all the way, I'm very practical, I think, sometimes, you know, when I talk about, like you multiply 60 kids, multiply by 40 years, it's 2,400 years of agony that one man dropped on our neighbourhood. Another number is for the moments of pleasure that he got, which there were moments, he put them into seconds or maybe a minute or two at a time that he got out of it. The terror for me lasted longer because it would have been like a half an hour or an hour or a couple of hours in the woods with him. But so my terror was a couple of hours, but his pleasure was minimalistic. It was seconds and minutes, half a dozen times with me. And for that pleasure, he destroyed what was left of my life from time I was 11 up to almost the present day. And I would want to know, was it worth those few seconds of pleasure,
was it worth destroying your life? And he did destroy your life.
Yeah. Well, I fought hard to get it back, and it's back, but it's, they're the questions. They're the kind of mathematical questions. They're not psychological.
I know.
But the other side is, I have to forgive him. I have to find forgiveness for him. Not for him. I find forgiveness for him, for me, because I can't live with the anger. The anger would do me in.
He's in jail now, and he's nearly 70, and hopefully he'll spend a lot more years in there too.
He won't get out, I would like to say to other fellas, and if they're there, you know, don't lose hope. He said, if this report is bringing you down, that's what I was thinking about this morning, all morning. If you see this report and there's nothing in it for you, that's okay. It's because we're in the process now of getting there. I'm not going to sit on this, spend the rest of it. If another 40 years to fight to get a review into Skelton Ireland, a proper review, which is this is, to me, it's an improper review. It has no teeth. It was hired by Skelton Ireland to come in and do a job, and he's done it. And even in it, he describes we. He includes himself. He's not isolating himself from the organisation. He's using the word we. The wording is unbelievable, and I won't go into too much detail.
Okay.
But if there's victims out there,
come forward.
I'd like them to know that, you know, the war's not over.
I think this is only the tip of the iceberg. It's just like at the very start when the first reports come out with the Catholic Church, this is like the tip of the iceberg. I mean, this report is now going to encourage, and your interview today, and we spoke to 1 in 4 a few minutes ago, and we will talk about it again. I think it's going to encourage more people to think about what happened to them and the experience that you had, Paul. Maybe they had similar experiences and now they'll come forward. And of course, this guy was quite prolific, obviously. But I mean, when you look at the figures, and these are just guessing figures at the moment, you know what I mean? 356 victims and 275 perpetrators, which means some of those were serial perpetrators. Clearly, I mean, there was a lot going on that shouldn't have gone.
Dave O'Brien done 60 kids, you know?
Yeah, that's absolutely.
Just one.
Yeah.
And the few more that we do know of done multiple. I'm not talking about two or three. I'm talking about in tens and dozens, you know?
Well, listen, Paul, thank you very much indeed for coming on the air.
No,
you're
a gentleman. Thanks a million for having us on. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks, Paul, I'm sure we'll talk to you again. I'd like to talk to you again.
Absolutely. Love to, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. Okay. No problem at all. All right, Paul. See you. Thanks very much indeed. There you go. There's Paul O'Toole, who is the victim of... David O'Brien, who is now languishing in jail, nearly 70 years of age, and hopefully he's a few more cases to go come before he gets out of jail. Hopefully he'll spend the rest of his life there and never see the light of day again. What a shocking, shocking story. Maybe you've been in that position. If you want to come forward, remember we did give you the number already for 1 and 4 as well. You can come forward and talk to them as well. 662-4070. Or indeed, you can go to An Garda Síochána if you want to make an allegation against anybody.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic Hits.